This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hello, this is Jean at the Talking Information Center reading the Fortune program with articles from Fortune and Forbes magazines. Today, from Fortune magazine, Ozempic's boom times. Novo Nordisk has made tens of billions in profit from its revolutionary weight loss and diabetes drugs. Now, the pharma giant is racing to reinvest in the future before competitors catch up. By Vivienne Walt. Officials in the town of Kalundborg have long touted the 800-year-old local church with its five towers as a must-see attraction. The Four Frua Kirke didn't draw hordes of tourists, however, since the Danish community of 16,000 sits far off the beaten track, 62 miles from Copenhagen. But now the world has landed on Kalundborg's doorstep, turning it from quiet outpost to boomtown. An influx of newcomers has been drawn by something much more modern, a multi-billion-dollar expansion spree funded by Novo Nordisk, the Danish drug manufacturer of the breakthrough diabetes and obesity treatments Ozempic and Wegovy. Seen from the office window of Kalundborg's longtime mayor, Martin Dam, a forest of cranes now dwarfs the church towers, though Dam makes sure to point them out. On gouged-out plots of land, floodlit after dark, thousands of construction workers toil around the clock to finish four new and upgraded Novo factories or to pave sidewalks for three new neighborhoods to accommodate thousands of new residents. Other workers will soon finally break ground on a new highway to Copenhagen, something for which the town has pushed for 30 years, according to Dom. The Ozempic and Wegovy craze, of course, is felt far beyond tiny Kalundborg. Those drugs have turned Novo Nordisk into a global powerhouse, with $42 billion in sales last year, for a while making it Europe's most valuable company. But the speed and scale of its impact is perfectly captured in miniature in the town's blazing fast expansion. Since 2021, Novo Nordisk has committed to spending 65 billion Danish kroner, nearly $9.5 billion, this decade to boost production of raw pharmaceutical ingredients in Kalundborg. The company has manufactured insulin in the town since 1969, but the mammoth new facilities will far outstrip those factories. At his desk, Dom, 62, grapples with issues he never imagined when he became mayor 15 years ago. He must integrate new residents who have arrived from as far afield as Mumbai, Rio de Janeiro, and Damascus to work, most for Novo Nordisk, and find places to live and Danish lessons. He's creating an international school for their children, set to open in September. Five gleaming shovels sit propped against the office wall, mementos from a common mayoral duty these days, groundbreaking ceremonies. Dom says the town has added 1,000 new jobs annually for four consecutive years. Even feeding the newcomers is complicated, he says, citing a food outlet near his office that recently served 17,500 hot dogs during a single month. Rush hour traffic, a new concept in Kalundborg, is crushing. A few blocks away, a sign bolted to the fence around an empty lot advertises future homes, listing a number for prospective tenants to contact. Dom says they ought to call quickly or risk losing out. Everything is already rented out before it is finished, he says, in a tone of disbelief. In one sense, the Kalundborg growth boom is driven and financed by Americans, by far the biggest market for Novo Nordisk's blockbuster drugs. Novo Nordisk, founded in 1923, was long known primarily as a producer of insulin. Ozempic, an injectable form of the molecule semaglutide, which mimics the human GLP-1 hormone and was invented by Novo Nordisk scientists, was approved in 2017 by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to treat type 2 diabetes, a condition that affects an estimated 38 million Americans. Since Ozempic also led to significant weight loss, it spurred explosive off-label use among clinically obese Americans as well as Elon Musk and other moneyed celebrities. In 2021, the FDA approved Ozempic's close twin, Wegovy, specifically for obesity, sending semaglutide demand soaring. Still, for many, Ozempic has become shorthand for the new class of weight loss wonder drugs. Novo's revenues surged 26% in 2024, yielding net profits of about $14.6 billion. Together, Ozempic and Wegovy generated about $26 billion in sales, according to the company's financial report in February. American consumers accounted for more than 71% of the company's obesity drug sales. Last year, the FDA approved Ozempic to treat heart diseases as well. Novo took about 40 years to reach 5 million patients in the U.S. It's gone to 10 million just in the last couple of years, says Dave Moore, Novo's executive vice president for U.S. operations. The economic effects of this semaglutide wave have rippled far beyond Kalundborg. The sales have become a major economic force in Novo's tiny homeland of Denmark, whose population of 6 million is smaller than that of New York City. In the U.S., a huge factory expansion with buildings that stretch half a mile has broken ground in Clayton, North Carolina. And in December, Novo bought New Jersey drug manufacturer Catalent for $11.7 billion, giving it three more U.S. factories with which to meet demand. It's hard to predict how much faster or higher Novo's obesity drug sales will rise. The patent on semaglutide expires in the U.S. in 2032. Yet Moore downplays the mounting threat from competitors like industry leader Eli Lilly. There is room for several obesity drug manufacturers in the U.S. alone, he says, while other countries remain largely untapped. In March, a study funded by the Gates Foundation concluded that most of the world's adults will be clinically obese by 2050. Says Moore, "We are just getting started." Still, Novo Nordisk must grapple with the question, what comes after the Ozempic boom? With an almost bottomless pot of resources from blockbuster obesity drugs, can its scientists crack diseases that have dogged researchers for years? Alzheimer's, sickle cell anemia, maybe intractable cancers? In numerous interviews in Denmark, Novo executives talked about what the future might hold. They cautioned that breakthroughs often come unexpectedly, much as semaglutide, which was created to treat diabetes, became a blowout obesity drug. Executive Vice President Henrik Wolf, who heads Novo Nordisk's product supply division, believes semaglutide will lead to a whole new class of treatments. He gestures to a wall of blurry black-and-white portraits of Novo's founders, who commercialized insulin in the 1920s, a revolution in diabetes treatment. Semaglutide, he says, feels like the most pivotal change in the company, maybe since those guys up there. The hunt for the next moonshot has begun. That much was clear when Fortune visited the circular, skylit corporate headquarters in Copenhagen's Bagsværd suburb and Novo Nordisk Foundation in its art-filled waterfront building site several miles away. While they're separate entities, the company and the foundation are tightly intertwined. The foundation receives 26% of the company's revenues, but controls 70% of the voting shares, effectively allowing it to make crucial strategic decisions and block any corporate takeover. Kasim Kute, CEO of Novo Holdings, which manages the foundation's $187 billion in assets, sits on the company's board. And until 2021, the foundation's CEO, Mads Krogsgaard Thomsen, was Novo Nordisk's chief scientist. He helped persuade a skeptical board to invest heavily in obesity treatments. Today, a 3D-printed semaglutide molecule sits proudly on a display shelf in his office. The foundation has doubled its grants and investments in the past 5 years to about $1.45 billion in 2024. It's now one of the world's three biggest health foundations, and unlike the Gates Foundation, which is set up to expire sometime after Bill and Melinda Gates die, the Novo Foundation will operate in perpetuity. Kute says Novo Holdings is planning to invest about $5 billion a year rising to $7 billion a year by 2030. Given that pool of resources, I ask, what limits are there to Novo's hunt for its next revolutionary breakthrough? Well, human biology, Kuté answers with a wry laugh. He says that while it's not clear which discoveries will work, surplus finances and disruptive technology suggest that successes are within reach. We are unquestionably in a golden era of innovation, he says. The strongest clue to the potential disruption lies a 5-minute walk away in the temporary digs of the Foundation's newest major investment, the Danish Center for AI Innovation, DCAI. Its centerpiece is a $100 million supercomputer, recently ranked among the world's fastest. That project began after Novo's Foundation and NVIDIA agreed last year to work together on quantum computing, health data, and biotech. Within 6 months, the AI supercomputer had opened. Roughly the size of a basketball court, it contains 1,528 H100 Tensor chips from NVIDIA. We are like a living lab for NVIDIA, Thompson says. The supercomputer, named Gefion, after the ancient Norse goddess of prosperity, was unveiled in October by NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang, who flew to Copenhagen for a plugging-in ceremony alongside King Frederick of Denmark and the center's new CEO, Nadia Carlston, an American engineer and a former executive at Amazon Web Services Quantum Computing Center in Pasadena, among other postings. On stage, Huang seemed delighted. All the researchers are going to be clamoring for time on the system, he told an audience of dignitaries and Novo executives, calling the computer a factory of intelligence. Added Huang, we are inventing something fundamentally new. DCAI will charge businesses and researchers to use the supercomputer, with academic projects paying cut-rate prices. The center will focus on life sciences and health and is vetting requests to make sure they have good intent, Carlson tells me over lunch in Copenhagen. She says pitches from aspirants are starting to accelerate. All companies with worthwhile goals, she claims, will be considered as clients, even an arch rival like Eli Lilly. For Novo itself, the supercomputer could provide a clear path to its next breakthrough. The potential for AI generally in drug development is enormous, Carlston says. New drugs currently take between 10 and 15 years and billions of dollars to develop, from initial research through bringing them to market. This is going to really change that, she says. The whole process will be compressed. Thompson credits the Ozempic bonanza for the NVIDIA partnership. The success of GLP-1 drugs has boosted not only Novo Nordisk's resources, but its clout. The foundation's CEO cites the suddenly large number of leaders requesting meetings with him at the World Economic Forum in Davos every January, something he says was previously unimaginable. Jensen would not have come to us 4 years ago, he says. It is not just a feel-good thing. It enables us to have more impact on global challenges. That impact is beginning to be felt around Denmark. Up a narrow wooden staircase in the Health and Medical Sciences faculty building at the University of Copenhagen, Eske Willerslev, a renowned Danish evolutionary biologist and professor, has settled into his new office, having returned home after nearly a decade at Cambridge University. Novo's lavish research funding, he says, was the irresistible draw. Willerslev, 53, received about $82 million from Novo's foundation to run a 7-year study on ancient food cultivation in partnership with 16 universities across the world in order to examine how people centuries ago survived cataclysmic climate shocks. He has spent decades accumulating a vast quantity of data, including soil samples from Greenland dating back more than 2 million years when the Arctic was far warmer. All that data will be fed into the Gefion supercomputer, allowing Willerslev's team to finally analyze the results. What would have taken 3 years before will now take 1 week, Willerslev says. In Willerslev's mind, the massive resources for research will have a big effect on Denmark, allowing the country to attract top researchers and giving it outsized influence in science, especially, he points out, since funding for the U.S. National Institutes of Health has been cut. We are in a very, very unique position, he says. It is really a huge leverage for Denmark. Novo is not the only large company in Denmark, which is also home to the brewer Carlsberg and shipping giant Maersk. But semaglutide has brought a flood of revenues into the economy at a scale that few other companies in other countries can match. Denmark recently increased its forecast GDP growth for this year to 2.9%, up from 2.2%, with the extra due almost entirely to Novo Nordisk. In 2023, the central bank estimated Denmark's economy wouldn't have grown at all without its drug exports. If you just look at GDP, we are much higher growth than neighboring countries. Lars Olsen, chief economist of Denmark's largest financial institution, Danske Bank, said in a report in December, that's due to the pharmaceutical industry and Novo Nordisk in particular. To harness its leverage, Novo must keep pace with fierce competition in the obesity drug market. Eli Lilly has stockpiled oral versions of its GLP-1 drugs, readying them for sale next year, while Pfizer is running trials of a similar treatment. Novo, whose stock dropped in March after a new obesity drug caused less weight loss than it had predicted, says it plans to submit an oral version of its semaglutide drugs for FDA approval before July. Increased production is crucial to beating the competition. Nowhere in Denmark is that effort as evident as in Little Kalundborg. On an icy February morning, about 20 students crowded into a room in the town's Helix Lab, a modern glass and wood building largely funded by Novo's foundation. Helix opened in 2022 as a biotech robotics and research facility designed to train enough high-skilled workers for Danish industry in general and for the town's fast-rising factories in particular. The lab's director, Annette Birk, says companies, including Novo Nordisk, keep a close eye on the lab for potential hires. Students largely commute from Copenhagen, but this year most have opted to stay after their training, finding plentiful job offers in Kalundborg. We were really amazed and really proud, says Birk. Assimilating newcomers is a growing preoccupation for Kalundborg, which badly needs them to stay. The municipality has a 4-person settlement team, which tracks new arrivals, attempting to create a sense of belonging in a small, remote town with long, dark winters, few activities, and a language that many don't speak. One morning in Kalundborg, 6 women, all spouses of men recently hired by Novo Nordisk, gathered to discuss their challenges. Over coffee and Danish pastries, all described struggling to knit together new lives. In Syria, if a new neighbor moves in, we immediately go over to meet them, says Sarah Sala, who quit her job in Damascus last December to follow her husband, an engineer, to Kalundborg. That is not part of this culture. But new arrivals are also bringing their own cultures to Kalundborg. Miguel Rivera, a Brazilian safety specialist for an energy services company, who arrived with his wife and 2 children 2 years ago, launched Kalundborg's first indoor soccer team in February, attracting several other Brazilian expats. Other new arrivals are collaborating with town leaders to plan a publicly funded youth center. This is a big change, and it is happening fast, says Mayor Dom. He's an eyewitness as one industry, indeed one company, forever changes this far corner of Europe. Next, from Forbes magazine, Virtuous Greed. Virologist Michael Taylor does volunteer work helping cancer patients. His task, picking healthcare stocks. By William Baldwin. I have never known much good done by those affected to trade for the public good, Adam Smith said. Maybe he'd have made an exception for the Simplify Healthcare Exchange-Traded Fund. All of its 0.5% fee revenue after overhead is donated to the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. The fund's portfolio manager, Michael F. Taylor, takes no salary. Private businesses that give away all profits and also succeed as businesses are scarce. The Newman's Own food branding operation, which has donated $600 million to children's causes, is unusual. An eleemosynary aim would seem to be even more out of place on Wall Street, where greed is good is the mantra. This is the first true impact investment ETF, brags Taylor, 52, who retired young and prosperous from a hedge fund career. I have the luxury of not having to receive money for my efforts. So far, the fund has sent $250,000 to Komen. He picked Komen, he says, because it can effectively invest money in medical research, some $10 million a year recently. Customers of the Simplify Fund aren't making any sacrifices. The actively managed ETF, which opened in late 2021 and has attracted $144 million in assets, has averaged a 5.3% annual return since inception, per Y charts, matching the return of the giant Healthcare Select SPDR fund, which passively tracks an index. Taylor is assuredly not running any closet index fund. His annual turnover is 210%, par for a hedgy, but freakish for an ETF. The SPDR fund owns Merck, Biogen, Amgen, and Pfizer. Taylor shuns all four because, he says, looming patent expirations will decimate their profits. Pfizer commits the additional sin of making COVID vaccines, which the iconoclastic Taylor views as no good. No one can accuse this guy of being shy about his opinions. At the beginning of the pandemic 5 years ago, he was saying loudly and impolitically that the virus was a man-made Chinese concoction. Now he sputters about Moderna. Its mRNA vaccine can cause havoc with the immune system, he says, and might have to be withdrawn from the market. He may be wrong about that, but he has been right to avoid the stock, which is in the SPDR index fund. It's down from a high of $484 to a recent $35. Taylor is entitled to an opinion about viruses. After getting a Master of Science degree from Johns Hopkins, he went to work for Genvec, a company trying to use viruses to deliver genes into the body. He was dismayed to discover that an awful lot of the job involved moving beakers from one table to another. "I love the science, I just don't like doing it," he says. "I might as well have been a carpenter." Something else bothered him. This was during one of Wall Street's manias for biotechnology, and Genvec stock was being touted on television. He had a dim view of the company's prospects and wished he could bet against it. Solution? Business school. After getting an MBA from the University of Rochester, he went to work for a succession of money managers, Oppenheimer, Caxton, Citadel, Millennium. He relates that one of his successes was getting into Gilead, now a big company, when it was in the early stages of making drugs for HIV. Another was shorting Valeant, the high flyer with factitious revenue growth. The Simplify ETF owns shares in some big companies familiar to healthcare investors, like Eli Lilly. Lilly looks expensive at 70 times trailing earnings, but is going to enjoy a burst of revenue, Taylor predicts, given the recent decision by Medicare to cover its expensive weight loss drug for patients who have sleep apnea. Overweight, sleep-deprived elderly patients also need an air pump made by ResMed. Taylor holds that stock as well. Outside the mainstream medical companies, the Taylor portfolio can best be described as quirky. He owns Chewy. Most of its customers think of it as a dog food company. Taylor sees the payoff elsewhere, in the distribution of high-markup veterinary medicines. Pure Cycle Technologies is a money-losing firm working on a way to recycle polypropylene. What's it doing in the healthcare fund? Taylor was looking for beaten-up stocks that might rebound and put garbage stocks into a search bar. Google served up a collection of waste management companies, including this one. Intrigued, he dug into the chemistry and concluded that Pure Cycle is on the cusp of commercialization that will yield billions in revenue. Simplify's rules allow up to 20% of assets to fall outside healthcare, and when shares were trading below $4, off from a $32 high, the fund started buying. Pure Cycle really recently closed above $7. Arcutis Biotherapeutics is another long-shot bet with a potentially big payoff. This money loser is developing biotech treatments for autoimmune disease. The SPDR Health Fund owns none of it. Taylor's Fund has 8% of assets in the company. Immunology is as big a deal as virology. Future treatments for cancer and diseases such as psoriasis and multiple sclerosis will involve manipulations of the immune system. Taylor has a personal stake in immunology research. He suffers from an autoimmune disease that left him with crippling spinal pain until a recent experimental treatment involving lasers. The treatment worked. He's walking around now after years of spending most days lying on his back. Investors blow hot and cold on developmental stage companies like Genvec, PureCycle, and Arcutis. In the past few years, they have been rather cool. Since Simplify Healthcare opened, healthcare in general, and biotech stocks in particular, have underperformed the market. This optimistic risk-taker is convinced that the market will turn in his favor. We're in a golden age of discovery and development in biotechnology, and only at the very beginning, he says. Humans are going to be living longer and better lives. Let's hope he's right. There's a brief sidebar to this article titled How to Play It by William Baldwin. Buying sector funds to beat the averages is a fool's errand, but there is something to be said for them as a way to offset lopsided exposures in your spending patterns. Thus, oldsters confronting outlandish drug costs and the insolvent Medicare program might want to get shares of a medical fund. One choice is the idiosyncratic ETF described in the adjoining story. A blander alternative would be an index fund, Healthcare Select SPDR, Vanguard Healthcare, or Fidelity MSCI Healthcare. They have assets between $2 billion and $39 billion, expenses below 0.1%, and nearly identical top holdings weighted to the biggest players. And that concludes this week's edition of the Fortune Program. My name is Jean, and it's been a pleasure to read for you.
Hello, and welcome to Readings from Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine, read to you by Steve Malisi. What to expect in the job market? Especially in the most competitive fields, job seekers will need to strategize to stand out. Lately, the headlines have been filled with news of layoffs, especially for federal employees and tech workers. Depending on your field, however, your job may not be at much risk of hitting the chopping block. And if you are looking for a new role, your prospects may be closely tied to your corner of the market. For some job hunters, finding work can take months. When it comes to unemployment, the figures started the year looking good, with the overall unemployment rate at a low 4% in January. But unemployment data is only part of the story. Although layoffs haven't been widespread across industries, there are fewer job openings, says Harry Holzer, senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institution and an economist at Georgetown University. The economy added 143,000 jobs in January 2025, compared with an average of 166,000 per month in 2024 and about 216,000 per month in 2023, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. In general, employers are holding on to their workers and, at the same time, cautious in their hiring, says Allison Srivastava, economist with the Indeed Hiring Lab. The situation varies by industry, she says. Almost 75% of the new jobs added in 2024 were in three industries: healthcare and social assistance, government, and leisure and hospitality. For federal government jobs, the picture is changing significantly because of the federal hiring freeze that President Trump ordered when he took office and the extensive layoffs among federal government employees that followed. And that may cause a ripple effect that reaches other related businesses and companies that are losing government grants and funding. We're not sure yet how far this is going to go and how big an effect it will have, Holzer says. The big winner has been healthcare. Healthcare employment growth before the pandemic averaged 1.7% or 2% year over year. And last year it was 3.7%, says Julia Pollack, chief economist at ZipRecruiter. While other fields can consolidate and automate functions, in healthcare, that's difficult to do. You need people. In many other areas, people have struggled to find work. Some of the most challenging fields, Pollack says, have been human resources, marketing, and communications. Tech hiring is down after an earlier boom. Blue-collar jobs in industries such as transportation and warehousing have not been growing as quickly as they were before the pandemic. Some of these shifts can be especially tough for new graduates, historically the most sensitive group to any change, Holzer says. The 2025 College Hiring Outlook by the Drexel University LeBeau College of Business found that employer optimism had reached its lowest point since 2021, with only 21% of employers rating the job market as excellent or very good. Employers are adopting a more cautious approach driven by economic pressures and budget constraints, the report says. With reduced optimism, employers are likely to prioritize selective hiring, focusing on essential skills and expanding internships and co-op programs to build a strong talent pipeline. Advice for job seekers. The following steps can help with your job search, and some of the guidance is different than it has been in the past. If you're a college student, start early. An internship in the summer after junior year and a focused career search helped undergraduate students at the University of Wisconsin School of Business find jobs in 2024. 95% of the graduates seeking employment had a job within 6 months of graduation, and 94% said they were satisfied with their job, says Melissa Leffen, Executive Director of Undergraduate Career, Employer, and Pathway Engagement for the business school. More than 60% ended up returning to the employer where they did their internship after their junior year, Leffen says. Use AI to sharpen your resume and cover letter. Even though it's easy to apply to a lot of jobs online, you won't get very far if you send the same resume and cover letter to everyone. Employers are using artificial intelligence filters to search for keywords and skills to decide who makes it to the next level. Look for keywords and skill sets in job listings and explain how they compare to your experience. Include skill development rather than just job responsibilities in your resume. While you shouldn't use AI to write your cover letter and resume, you can use it to refine them by asking a tool such as ChatGPT to suggest improvements, for example, and practice for job interviews, Pollack says. She recommends signing up for email alerts of job listings and acting quickly when one catches your eye. Many companies look at applications only in the first week or so, says Pollack. Don't overlook in-person networking. Join associations, go to conferences in person, set up brief meetings in person or on the phone with people in fields you're interested in. Even if you graduated college years ago, take advantage of its alumni network and get in touch with former colleagues. In a competitive job market, networking can be critical, Leffen says. Even if they don't get you a job, they can give you information that can help you with your cover letter and resume. Consider pivoting to a field in a growing sector. Getting a health-related credential, such as in health tech or nursing, or taking time to get licenses or certifications for skilled trades, can create more opportunities, Pollack says. We see tremendous need in the skilled trades. Most employers can find laborers, but they can't find the highly experienced skilled electricians, carpenters, and plumbers. If you want to remain in your sector, find out what certifications or continuing education courses will give you an edge. Street Smart with James K. Glassman. How to cope with inflation. When it comes to inflation, the U.S. has been living in a fool's paradise. Inflation, that is, the rise in the general level of prices, has been a fact of economic life, averaging 3.3% annually since 1914. But from 2009 to 2020, the Consumer Price Index rose just 2.1% a year. We got used to inflation one-third lower than the historical norm, which is why post-COVID prices have been such a shock. The best way to drive inflation out of the system is to hike short-term interest rates. rates have been sitting close to zero from 2009 to 2022, with the exception of a brief period around 2018. Then the Federal Reserve started to increase rates relentlessly to more than 5% in just 2.5 years. The antidote worked up to a point. Inflation dropped from 8% in 2022 to 4.1% in 2023 and to 2.9% last year. But the Fed's target is 2%, and it's having a tough time getting there. American inflation looks increasingly worrying, said a headline in The Economist in February. President Trump was elected in part to stop prices from rising so much, and he has been trying. With Elon Musk, he has cut government employment and programs, but prices don't react quickly to fiscal changes unless they're so extreme as to cause a recession, an almost certain way to end inflation with a cure as bad as the disease. The president also wants to drive down energy costs by increasing domestic oil drilling, but oil prices are determined by global forces. Consumers are concerned, and if they start to think that inflation is rising, they will drive up prices by buying goods ahead of further anticipated increases. The most recent University of Michigan survey of consumers found that expectations for inflation over the next year jumped from 3.3% in the previous month's survey to 4.3%, the highest reading since November 2023, and the second consecutive month of unusually large increases. A big reason is the threat of higher tariffs, which would raise the cost of goods that Americans buy. Not just imported goods, but U.S.-made products as well. Look for pricing power. So the fool's paradise may be ending. Inflation of 3% may not sound like much, but it means that the dollar loses half its value in 24 years. At 4%, it happens in just 18 years. In such a scary environment, is there a way to protect your investments? The surprise answer is to buy stocks. Consider the worst period of inflation in U.S. history, 1977 to 1981, when the CPI rose at an annualized average rate of 10%. The S&P 500 stock index returned an annualized 8%, a bit below the norm, but much higher than returns on long-term U.S. treasuries, which fell by an average of 1% a year, including interest payments and price declines. The reason stocks do better is that businesses can counter their own higher costs by raising prices. With inflation averaging about 5% between 2022 and 2024, and the Fed aggressively boosting interest rates, the S&P 500 has produced an annualized return of about 9%. In an article I wrote in this magazine 19 years ago, with inflation rising, I recommended stocks of companies that appeared to have the power to raise their prices without much resistance. One example was Coca-Cola, which has risen from its price back then of $22 a share while paying a dividend that has jumped by two-thirds. The yield is now 2.9%. I still like Coke. No one can make Coke but Coke. Other stocks in this category are technology businesses that sell distinctive services by subscription, charging small amounts each month for cloud storage, for example. Apple and Alphabet are excellent choices. A non-tech stock that raises prices with impunity is Public Storage, a real estate investment trust that provides a more mundane kind of storage for cartons and furniture you don't want to keep at home. Once you have stored your earthly possessions with Public Storage, moving them to escape a 5% price increase is annoying and onerous. The stock has returned an annualized 11.7% for the past 5 years. Another category for inflationary times includes stocks that earn a fairly consistent proportion of a growing pie. Unfortunately, these franchise companies, such as advertising agencies, insurance firms, realtors, and ticket sellers, are undergoing upheavals now. Still, there are stocks I like. One is Live Nation Entertainment, the giant concert producer. Another is Chubb, an insurance company specializing in high-income clients. People, not pork bellies. Prices of commodities typically rise in inflationary times, but buying leveraged futures contracts comes with severe risks. Transaction fees are high, and a sharp dip can wipe out all of your capital. Also, I have a bias against putting money into things, lumber, pork bellies, gold, rather than people and ideas. Instead, invest in commodities through natural resource funds that let you take advantage of human ingenuity as well as the price of goods rising with inflation. An attractive choice is Vanguard Materials, with an expense ratio of just 0.09%. The exchange-traded fund's portfolio is headed by Linde, a UK-based company that sells industrial gases such as nitrogen and helium, and has a market capitalization, price times shares outstanding, of $221 billion. The stock has doubled in less than 5 years. Also consider iShares North American Natural Resources, an ETF whose portfolio leans heavily toward oil and gas stocks, such as EOG Resources, but also owns such intriguing companies as CRH, an Ireland-based producer of building material such as granite and sandstone. What about TIPS, or Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, which pay a guaranteed real rate of interest plus an inflation kicker that rises with monthly charges in the CPI? At an auction in February, 30-year TIPS were sold carrying a real rate of about 2.4%, the highest since 2001. If inflation averages 3% until maturity, your annual return will exceed 5%. But TIPS markets are remarkably volatile. In a time of above-average inflation, I would stay away from bonds and bond funds, except those with very short-term holdings. The problem is that when interest rates rise with inflation, the bonds you bought at a lower fixed rate lose their value. Better stick with stocks, even though you'll have to be content with lower returns than in times of stable prices. In fact, one of the best ways to ride out inflation is simply by owning a representative chunk of the market through SBDR, Dow Jones Industrial Average, an ETF known as Diamonds. Many of the Dow's 30 components are built for inflationary times, among them Nike and insurance giant Travelers. Also, the Dow leans more toward value-oriented stocks, which do better during inflation, than toward growth-focused issues. Inflation will never be an investor's friend, but it doesn't have to be an enemy either. Keep cool and carry a diversified portfolio. ESG investing navigates political backlash. The Kiplinger ESG 20 update. ESG, an investing style that eyes a company's profits, risks, and long-term sustainability through an environmental, social, or corporate governance lens, is weathering a political storm. The values-based strategy, also known as socially conscious or sustainable investing, traces its modern-day roots back to the latter part of the 20th century. Now, ESG is a four-letter word, says Paul Beland, global head of research for wealth management at CFRA Research. But backlash aside, ESG investing principles are as relevant today as they were 40 years ago, says Robert Klaber, director of sustainability research and a portfolio manager at Parnassus Investments. And they're still materially pertinent to a company's bottom line and investment prospects. We believe these investment concepts are durable for the long run, he says. Since our last update of the Kiplinger ESG 20, our favorite stocks and funds that stand out on ESG and financial metrics, the headwinds have stiffened. The Trump administration is less climate-friendly, intensely scrutinizing ESG and pushing for a federal government ban on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, initiatives. Wall Street's top regulator is moving closer to rescinding a rule requiring public companies to quantify the business risk caused by climate change. Employer-sponsored plans, such as 401ks, are in the crosshairs too. A U.S. District Court ruling in Texas earlier this year found that American Airlines violated the law by including funds in its retirement savings plan from an investment firm considering ESG factors in its proxy voting and other related shareholder engagement measures. Given the controversy, we want to reiterate that the Kiplinger ESG 20 comprises companies we think are good businesses with good investment prospects. Our picks include some of the best companies and stocks on the planet, such as computer chip designer NVIDIA and software giant Microsoft. Our role is to provide readers with a broad range of investment options and strategies to consider as they look to increase their wealth. The evidence shows there is still significant interest in values-infused investing. 7 of 10 investors say companies should incorporate ESG or sustainability considerations directly into their corporate strategy, according to consulting firm PwC. The size of the U.S. market for ESG or sustainable investing is $6.5 trillion, according to U.S. SIF, a Sustainable Investing Association. And despite a retreat from ESG investing in the final quarter of 2024, assets in U.S. sustainable funds rose 6.3% last year, according to Morningstar. Investors still want to own companies that align with their values. I think people are asking themselves, if the federal government isn't going to prioritize the changes that I want to see in the world, how can I support that change? One answer is through their investments, says Cy McMillan, co-manager of Green Century Balanced, a member of the KIPP ESG 20. Mixed performance. Amid all the noise, the list of our 15 ESG-friendly stocks returned 6.2% on average, trailing the 18.4% gain in the S&P 500 index. Still, four of our stock picks topped the broad market benchmark. AI chip leader NVIDIA, lauded for its labor relations and employee benefit perks, was the top gainer, rising 57.9%. CBRE Group, a commercial real estate company, was up 54.5%. Hilton Worldwide Holdings, another corporate governance leader, rallied 30%. Heating and cooling giant Trane Technologies, which gets high marks for safety, rose 26.3%. The laggard was Novo Nordisk, maker of anti-obesity drugs. Novo, which earned kudos for partnering with UNICEF to prevent childhood obesity and donating medicine, is in a two-horse race with Eli Lilly in the fast-growing market for weight loss drugs. Novo shares are down 23.1% in the past year, with the bulk of the loss stemming from a one-day plunge late in 2024 after disappointing trial results for another experimental injectable weight loss drug. But we're sticking with Novo and its existing injectable obesity drug Wegovy and diabetes-focused Ozempic. The runway for weight loss drugs remains long. Novo says only 1.2 million patients are being treated with Wegovy out of the 55 million whose healthcare plans would cover it. The promise of the global obesity opportunity remains intact, according to analysts at Morgan Stanley. Another bullish signal? Novo's blockbuster obesity and diabetes drugs posted stronger than expected sales growth in the final quarter of 2024. And the drug maker's 2025 forecast of 16 to 24% sales growth and 19 to 27% profit growth topped analysts' projections, calming fears of a U.S. sales slowdown. Breaking down performance by each of the ESG pillars, our favorite environmental stocks lagged the most. The E Group posted an average one-year decline of 2.6%. First Solar, the U.S. maker of photovoltaic solar panels beset by U.S. policy uncertainty and competition from Chinese solar companies, fared worse, with a 12-month drop of 11.5%. Our S category fared best, gaining an average 12.8%, and our 5G stocks returned an average of 8.5%. All five of our fund selections finished higher in the past 12 months, with FlexShares Stocks Global ESG ETF posting the biggest gain at 13.2%. Making changes. We are removing Target from the ESG 20. Although the company's commitment to shareholder rights still rates it high on governance, its double-digit percentage stock price declines in the past 1 and 3 year periods ranks it dead last among our 15 stocks. That gives us pause, as did the retailer's recent decision to suspend its DEI initiatives in the face of political pressure, which runs afoul of the spirit of ESG investing. In its place in our governance category, we are adding NVIDIA, which is moving from its current slot as a social standout. The chip giant excels in all parts of the ESG acronym, including G, where it earns high marks for strong ethical practices, tying executive pay to measurable corporate financial metrics, and board independence. 12 of 13 directors are independent. Investors concerned about NVIDIA losing its dominant leadership position in the artificial intelligence race due to competition from China's AI startup DeepSeek and other new entrants need to take a deep breath. "I don't think their business model has been disrupted," says CFRA analyst Angelo Zeno, who rates NVIDIA a buy. Despite NVIDIA's initial sell-off on news of competitive AI models that are cheaper to run and use older chips, Wall Street remains confident in NVIDIA's long-term AI prospects. New AI innovation will result in a significant increase in the usage of AI models overall, which in turn means more usage of NVIDIA's sophisticated GPU chips. "We think this is bullish," says Dom Rizzo, manager of T. Rowe Price Technology ETF. The case for Costco. To take over for NVIDIA in our list of social standouts, we are adding big box retailer Costco Wholesale. The retail heavyweight is a Wall Street favorite. Costco has posted annualized returns of 41.6% and 27.5% in the past 1 and 3 year periods, thanks to its affordable prices and growing and recurring membership revenue. "Everyone knows they have a cult-like following," says CFRA's Beland. Morgan Stanley analyst Simeon Gutman dubs Costco a market share gainer that will continue to benefit from technology and supply chain advantages that lead to faster growth. The retailer is also a champion of its diverse workforce and earns kudos for treating its employees and suppliers fairly and equally. Earlier this year, its board recommended that shareholders vote down a request to report on the possible business risks of its DEI policies, such as potential shopper boycotts and litigation. And nearly all Costco shareholders, 98%, voted against the measure. Still, Trump's DEI executive orders sow uncertainty about voluntary DEI initiatives, according to attorneys at Pillsbury Law Firm. In late January, 19 state attorneys general urged Costco to end unlawful discrimination through its DEI practices. Costco shares aren't cheap, trading for nearly 58 times estimated earnings for the year ahead. So, like Costco customers waiting to pounce on sale merchandise, investors will do best to buy this stock on dips. Walmart woos wealthy shoppers. Walmart is winning over upper-income families. Households earning more than $100,000 a year accounted for 75% of the retailer's market share gains in its third quarter last year. And Walmart said the same consumers continue to drive growth in the fourth quarter. Why are wealthier consumers flocking to a store known for ultra-low prices? In a February earnings call, John David Rainey, Walmart's chief financial officer, cited the retailer's convenience and expanding assortment of products as the key drivers. Walmart has added tech items, premium grocery options, and low-price, luxury-inspired fashion to its online marketplace. Walmart has also focused heavily on amping up its membership program, Walmart Plus, by improving same-day and next-day delivery speeds and offering new perks. Members who pay a fee of $98 annually or $12.95 a month get free shipping with no order minimum and early access to sale events and deals. Members receive free home delivery on orders of $35 or more from their local Walmart store, too. Recently, Walmart Plus has added benefits including free same-day delivery of prescriptions from its pharmacy and complimentary membership with POP, a pet care service that provides virtual access to veterinary professionals. And this has been readings from Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine, read to you by Steve Malisi. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.